Tana, thank you, Gary. Tani to be Hiya. We're in pages Kuf Tzadi Gimal. It's Rut Rabba. New item.
Look at this miracle.
Right there. Okay, sure. You're the administrator of these books. So, if that miracle is going to happen to anybody, Hashem knows who to make it happen to. You ready? Tana to be Hiya. Maybe we'll see something about the Inyan Ediyumatera. Let's see. Lo ta'asu avil b'mishpat. Okay. Melaved shadayan shemekalkel hadin karui hamisha shemot. Aval, sanui, mishukatz, herem to'eva. So we're talking about over here in the Midrash judges that are perverted judges, that they pervert justice. So the Gemara or the Midrash calls them five names. Perverted is only one of five names. They're called despised, disgusting, you know, abominable, you know, banned, corrupt judges. Vegorem hamisha devarim le'olam. And they cause five ills to the world. Metame et ha'aretz, they bring tum'ah to the land. Umehallel et Hashem. ומסלק את השכינה, ומפיל ישראל בחרב, it brings, God forbid, war to the Jewish people, ומגלם מארצם, and ultimately it brings to exile. So he says, לפי חומר שבו, לפי רוב שפנותינו בדור יתום זה, ראוי לכל הנכנס לדון, לברר שיחותיו, שיקבלו על מנת שמוחלים לו אם יקלקל את הדין. אהה. So therefore he says, today when you go to court, you should sign a waiver before that if the judge makes a mistake, you forgive him. Because you don't want the judge to bring all this damage to the world. So if the litigants, before they come to the case, they come along and say, listen, we're taking your decision, but if you make a mistake...
Well, what if he's corrupt?
It's
not a mistake.
No, you have to be mohalem. If you're mohalem, okay. We don't do that. No, he's saying you should do that. That's his advice. No, of course they don't do that. If the judge makes a mistake, they kill him. They curse him and his grandmother. Tani bihiya, lo ta'asu avil b'mishpat b'mida. Melamed shamoded nikra dayan. Interesting. Every person that in their business is a judge. You're judging your business. Because basically, if you work in a fruit store, you're weighing stuff. So you're judging. You're putting it on the scale. You're judging the weights. So if you judge correctly 5 pounds, or if you fool around with the scale, so you're a corrupt judge. You put the 5 pounds on the scale, but if it's not calibrated correctly, you're charging the guy for 5 pounds, even though it's less.
So basically, they have to be honest.
Every guy's a judge in his own business.
Yes.
The way you charge a customer for something, the way you bill him, the way you're doing it, you're judging. Hamoded nikra dayan. The guy who's measuring is called a dayan. Vim shiker, and if a guy lies in his measurings, nikra hamisha shemot, same thing. He's called the five ugly names, and he causes the five... So you see, there's other things that cause trouble to Klal Yisrael besides long wigs. Other averot, rabotai. We thought it's just the internet and long wigs. Those are the major ones, of course. Those are the two strawberries, of course. This is the main averot that plague us. But you see from the midrash that there's also gezel. Gezel is also in there. But you don't hear when there's a tragedy. They say, rabotai, stop being honest. You don't hear too much. Be honest. It always goes down to the two culprits of every tragedy, the internet and long wigs. Okay, I mean, I'm not questioning the problem with those two things, but I'm just pointing out that there might be other things as well. It's cause hereb, it causes galut, so the other avinot in the hopper, as they call it, that are disasters. Somebody got up and said, this happened because people are cheating in business. It's possible. Really, we don't know. So it's hard to say we know anything. It's a time for introspection where you start taking stock of stuff. So part of the things you have to take stock of, after the internet and the wigs, you have to take stock of, you know, are we conducting ourselves, are we staying in business? Are the scales calibrated correctly? Okay. So he says here, Rabotai, we're reading. Oy lador shemidotav shel sheker. Woe to the generation that their measures are falsehood. Damarabi benaya, b'shem ravuna, im ra'it ador shemidotav shel sheker. If you see that a generation that's, you know, filled with lies, malchut ba'o mitgarebo to ador. Then you see wars come out against these people. Ayen sham chomer shevo, v'en ha'atarim im ha'ares, yesh lemida shlema mida ketzara. They have two scales in their store. Exactly. And they fool around. You know, they say in the courts, they put the thumb on the scale. You know, so that's good. They put the thumb on the scale, weighs it down. So that's right, they have paid 5 pounds. Where can it be? So he puts his thumb on the scale. Ushaba kone liknot. When the customer comes to buy, im meshalem sakar tov. If he pays full price, notim lo mevida shelema. Vim enu meshalem tov, en dochin oto, el du mevida kasav hasera. Depending on how he pays, that's the one. If he pays full price, they give him the normal scale. But if he wants a discount, no problem, give him the discount. Yes, 100%. He was on the scale. So they're making it up on the other side anyway. So it's a difference. It's all sketch. Ah, you like a 20% discount? Absolutely. They take the scale at 20% off anyway. So they're giving the same stuff for the same price. Cheating. Ve'en lecha ona'a gedola mizu. There's no greater ona'a. I was once on a boat. So whoever catches the biggest fish, they give a prize. They give money. So you catch all day fish, and then they weigh the biggest fish on the boat. And whoever gets the biggest fish wins. So the Syrian guy in the boat catches a fish. It was a decent sized fish, but clearly it was not the biggest fish from the Guima catching, you know, whales. He's catching bluefish anchor. So the guy says, watch. He goes into his tool, the tackle box. And he takes the weights, the 5 pound weights, and he sticks it into the stomach of the thing. So now he says, watch this. So the guy's got a fish like this over here. It's like Moby Dick. The thing is the size of, I don't know what. And they put it on, they have like the bar. Yeah. They have two hooks. It's very easy. The guy holds like this. This Josh fish goes on. This guy puts a little fish on. The whole scale goes down. All the greens say, oh, that's something going on over here. Little did the guy know. Now, what do you think? They trust everything? The greens know every trick in the book. They fillet it after. That's the checks and balances of this here. So they fillet it to do an autopsy. Oh, they send it to the medical examiner to do the autopsy to see why is the fish so heavy. Sure enough, they open it up, you see the whole Yosef Mokir Shabbat, all the stuff in there. They killed the guy. It's money, you don't want money now, it's not stam. You're that shakran, cheating around.
Wow, you didn't fillet him.
If he didn't run, he was next. He would have been next. Ubvadaiki or say lo yir es siman beracha. That's for sure. People are fooling around in business. They're not going to see siman beracha. And I once saw from Rav Shimon Schwab. He said, and even if they have beracha, it's coming from satrachara. You know, sometimes you see that your guy's dishonest and the guy's making a ton of money. So he said, don't get nervous from that. It's not a contradiction to this. It's coming from the black side, the dark side. And the money that comes from the dark side, there's no beracha in that money, you know, long term. Besides all the punishments that cover your ten me'emah, yishmiru am v'yirau. The people should hear this and be afraid. I told you the story of Rabbi Weissmandel. Rabbi Weissmandel, survivor from the Holocaust, he opened up a yeshiva in the Nitri yeshiva, the Nitra Yeshiva, upstate New York. And he came out of the Holocaust. He's in one of the synagogues over there in some shul. And it's before Sukkot. So what happens? They come into the shul, a guy with a box of etrogim. He pours the box of etrogim on the teva. Abotai, etrogim are here. Every guy goes, takes the etrog. Okay, thank you. He's what? That's how they pick etrogim? We go, we look, we take the loop out, we check them, we analyze. Until we get an etrog, we touch 15 of them. We broke 15 pitoms till we get a good one. These guys, nothing. They go take the first one. He had like a bad opinion of these guys. Anyway, he's there on Sukkot now. So he sees that the custom in that shul was that they would invite one of the members to say the Halil. The Hazaf al-Sha'arit, and then they invite Chabod, lead the Halil. So he's sitting next to a guy. So the Gabbai comes, Chabod, the Halil. He says, I cannot. So you cannot. He says, yesterday I told a lie. It would not be proper for me to lead the congregation in Halil. I said, wow! I can't believe these people, what a level! He says, so I got it all wrong. He says, I'm looking at them because they're not careful the way they're picking a trog with all the... But they're careful in other things. That most people... Would anybody think twice if they're invited to be the Hazan, if they're worthy to be the leader because their mouth spoke a lie yesterday? They were very sensitive. And I'm not fit. So you see, there's two sides over here. So he says... Okay, so that's, by the way, that's Ruth. Turn the page, we go to Kohelet.
Wow, really?
We're moving from one midrash to the next. That's right. Amar b'Yitzhak. Oh, this might help us, let's see. Adam nechshal ba'avira. A guy, God forbid, he stumbles over a sin. That's a good word. Bu hayav mita l'shamayim. Listen, he didn't commit a sin that he's guilty on a death penalty on Sekilah Serefa. But in Shamayim, he's liable. There's certain sins that the punishment is mitabi de Shamayim. So a guy stumbled onto one of those type of sins. But mimit kapirlo. What's the kapara for such a guy? Met shoro. What happens? His ox dies. Avdat tanigilato. All of a sudden, his chicken dies. Nishbera siluhito. Or his glass breaks. Or his iPad gets stolen. So therefore, we all look at that as what their grandmothers used to tell us. Kapara. That if the person has a debt to pay, but I'm saying, no problem. I'm going to settle all the debts. Pay it that way. Nikshal be'eswa ketana. Or he stubs his little finger and some blood comes out. V'yatsam minu tipat dam. Miksat ha nefesh kechol ha nefesh. That's it. What's the difference if they kill him a whole way or by the way? Except the little blood, then it's over. So the Midrash clearly is telling you that these losses are, you know, for a reason.
It's beneficial.
Hazak Baruch. It's beneficial to the person. Habadai pshita. He says, pashut. Dehainu kishenu ko'es al ishto ubarav msharetav. So long as he doesn't get angry at the messengers. You understand?
Don't shoot the messenger.
No, because if he comes along and says, hey, what kind of, you left the door open, you let the people, you didn't do security, you people. So you missed the whole point over here. You missed the whole point. Of course you have to keep everything safe. But what is this? Hashem runs the world. So therefore, if you accept it as kapana, they were only messengers. The kid is running in the kitchen and he knocks over the vase. That you stupid kid, how many times did I tell you? What is this? The shame made you lose the item because you had to do something over there. Understand? Is that what we're saying? You have to accept it with love. Then you could say kapara. But after you yelled at the whole place and you put everybody on eggs, and then you come along and say, okay, kapara. Kapara for what? Kapara for them. Not for you.
I never understand that.
Ubali deketatab betokpadu. If it caused him to get angry at his wife, how come you didn't do that? I told you to lock the door. I told you don't put it there. How many times? Lo daishenu mechaper. Forget about the kapara. Ela shu mosif adato pesha. You only added to the sin now. Ulfid devre rabotenu. Asher mechayim vekayamim et vaset mushu safek. Yoter yesh lismawa kishem mafsid. Meshekimarviyah. Did I tell you that the book always talks to you? You don't listen to what I tell you. The book will explain this to us. There's no, we don't see it. You know what he just said?
Be more happy.
Be more happy when you lose something than when you make. Because when you make, it's not a kapara. So the rabbi Papoy said, listen, give the rabbi a little consolation today. I'll give the rabbi a little consolation today. He lost his gadget. No problem. You have to go home and say, so we're smiling. What happened today? I lost my gadget. That's why you're smiling? Absolutely. But yesterday you made $1,000. You weren't smiling as much. Because the rabbi said you just be happy more when you lose it. Because that's a kapara. It's not a kapara when you get something. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
When a guy goes to the store, he buys something. He's more happier than when he loses it. Many times it's the exact opposite. You can be happy when you buy it. But when it gets lost or when it gets stolen or breaks, you say, he's a mabjemo. Baruch Hashem. Kapara. He says, Belishum Safek, but he's convinced him. He doesn't have any, he has no doubt on that. What a way that these Sadiqim looked at loss. Looked at it in a Torah. That's why they lived to 1,000 years, these guys, because I mean, he didn't live so long to pay the rates. But they didn't stress these things. They didn't get.
They understood it.
They understood it, 100%. Rak, make the shuvah, adat aviti pashati, kapara. Ubarvaha in kapara. In making money, there's no kapara. The guy makes $10,000. We don't say kapara. It's kapara. What's kapara? He did something. If he always is going to make, velo yiralo hefsedim, and he doesn't ever incur a loss, nimsa ochel olamo behayav. He ate his world in his lifetime. But not good. All right, so there you have it, Rabotai. You don't find this coincidental. That's amazing. Baruch Hashem. That's what I always tell you. The biggest consolation is just learn. The Torah will always talk to you. The Torah is God talking to the person. When we pray, we're talking to God. When we learn, God's talking to the person. So God knows how to talk to a person. He knows exactly what book to open up, at which page, at what moment, in order to talk, at what day also, in order to talk to the person directly. I mean, he could have told this to me privately, but he told it to me in front of all our members, because we have a family in this class over here, so I'm not, I don't take offense. Next one. B'sha'a she'zaken yoshev v'doresh. Oh, it's an amazing piece. Rabbi gives a derashan. After the derashan is over, Baruch Adonai le'olam amen v'amen, they say to be Hananya ben Akashia. And it's followed by Kaddish. Do not underestimate that Kaddish that's said after a derashan. And here's the benefit. Afidu yesh lo shtar gezerot shel me'a shana. Even if he has 100 years of bad luck written on the shtar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mohel al kol avonotav. Then it's over.
Just for answering?
You say just. Obviously it's more than just.
Wow.
You see, that's the guy that during that Kaddish is running around talking and he misses the Yesh Amen Abam Barak. So for the conversation that he had, he gave up 100 years of debt. Habadai Peshita. Oh. It's Pashut. The Sigulat of the Vareda Kiyosef Lo Nevru Ela La'aseh Otem Kitroim Hashem Bifnim. Which means it's only if you do it the right way. Umay De Kaman. In this case, Shetina Oznav Kishol Kol Derasha. Not that he just catches the Kiddush. He has to listen to the Derasha. Hey, you're worried about the Kaddish. It takes 8 seconds. And the Derasha is an hour and a half. So he sleeps with the whole derasha. He talks to the whole derasha. He texts to the whole derasha. Kaddish. No, it doesn't work that way. You have to get the derasha. I'm not lishmor v'la'asot in order to internalize it. Okay, then when the kaddish comes, you answer b'chol kocho. Okay, phenomenal. Next one. Le'olam yamod adam atzmo kidu hatsho zakai v'hatsho hayav. A person should always assess himself. He makes his personal assessment 50-50. Hatsi, hatsi. Le'olam. Uchilu kol ha'olam kulo hatsho zakai v'hatsho hayav. And you have to also imagine the world is also teetering in the balance. Atzah mitzvah echad, you did one mitzvah, ashrav. You tilt not only your scale, but you tilt the world scale. Shechriyat atzor et ha'olam kulo lekav zechut. Avar avira echad, oy lo. Shechriyat atzmo, you tilted your own scale, and you tilted the world scale. Yerkam lekav chuba. Machshava zu v'chashbon zimun arbel yot ratz lemitzvah buri amara. This type of thought will keep you running towards mitzvot and running away from averot. Aval atayin ba'avon abad chashbon. Whoever came to Wednesday night Mesilat Yesharim class, we talked about this for a long time, that nobody's aware anymore. Part of the tactic of the Yetzer Hara is to not give you time to think. So he has you keep on running and running and running. So you never have a chance to sit down and think about where you're headed, your priorities, what are you doing in life. The Mesilat Yesharim actually brought a proof from this week's Perasha. This week's Perasha, the Jewish people start to murmur that they want to leave Egypt and bring Korbanot to God in the desert. But all hears them talking spiritual stuff. Korbanot, Hag, for God, holiday. So what does Paro respond? Paro says, Nirpim atem nirpim. You have too much time on your hands. That's why you're contemplating religious advancement. So what did you say? Tichbada avoda ala anashim. Make the work harder. Ve'al yishu b'divrei shaker. So they won't have time to talk in these false dreams. But all understood. Must be that they have some free time. So what are they doing? They're pondering important stuff. So what does he do? He makes the work measurably more difficult. So now there's no more free time. Once there's no more free time, you can't ponder your future. And that's what the Yitzhak does to us. Running and running. And everybody's talking to religious people, by the way. Even religious people, when's the last time they took stock of themselves? We're lucky if a religious guy can take stock on Kippur, which the day is earmarked for that. Outside of Kippur, when does he take it all? The Zohar Kadosh talks about the people, Mare de Hushbana, the masters of inventory. Businessman takes inventory on his stock often. If you sell stock, you always take how many of these I have, how many of those I sold it. Some people take stock every day. Today the computers, you sell one shoe, boom, already the inventory is updated. They order another shoe in order to replenish it right away without any. The inventory today is in real time. But when it comes to his own inventory against Olam Haba, he can go through years without ever taking stock, and that's Olam Haba. What's more important? A red shoe size 9 that he's got to know how many he has in stock at all times, or your eternity? He knows where he's holding in the warehouse, but he doesn't know where he's holding in the Olam Haba, because the Yitzhak keeps you busy from one thing to the next. Now, and I also made a point which I think is significant. In the olden days, you understand that they didn't have time. In the olden days, everything took so long to do. So you never had really time to contemplate anything. Just to do the daily chores of a house. I told you in the Monday night class, laundry was all day. Cooking was all day. You had to go from scratch, walk to the store, go back, cook it, cut the wood, put the web. Everything took so long in the olden days. So clearly in the olden days it was a big challenge. When do you have time for yourself to contemplate? That's why, by the way, all the avot and the tzaddikim were shepherds. They go in the fields, and they're just quiet over there, and they can just ponder. You don't got to do too much with the sheep. You just stand there, and the sheep run around eating, and they're standing there just in the quiet, solace area and meditate. It's what they do today, they call that. But today, who makes it what they do? Technically, you say, what? Well, we can do that in the car. But the first thing he does in the car, he puts on the noise.
Right.
Because the person cannot be alone with himself. That's the psychology of why he always has to turn on the radio. Because he doesn't like himself too much. You know, he has to be alone with himself in the car now, and it's just him and himself. And he doesn't like that company too much. Because he knows who he is. So he puts on the radio, so now it's already, it's to drown out who he is. And same thing, people do not want to be alone, but that's the Yetzirah Ra, because he says if the person would start to think even for a moment, Mishnah Shalim says, about his future, even if he would contemplate for one split moment, he says, Vadai, his language is Vadai, he would start the process of Teshuvah, and eventually it would lead to a total, so it doesn't take too much. But again, here's someone keep you running. And so today what happens, between phones and all the other stuff, so a person has a lot of time on his hands. But look at most people when they have nothing to do, the first thing they go for is what? The phone. And they're just pushing aimlessly. There's nothing to push. There's pushing what? Pushing for nothing significant. Just to keep you busy and not to think about your eternity. So that's what he's saying over here. Aval ata hen bavon avad hashbon. Ve'en ish sam alev machshava tova zu. Okay, we go to the next one. Rabbi Yirmiyah natal atara shel zayit ukshara berosho. What did he do? He took the crown of the olive, or the olive tree, ukshara berosho, and he tied it. That's what it sounds like. Shama Shmuel v'amar, Nicha avad di yitrim reshe, v'la avad ken, v'chen havale. He says in the bottom, Noach haya lo shiyuram rosho, v'lo la'asot ken. It seems they made a tiara out of it. He made from the olive branch, a tiara. So it says in those days they made a gezerah. They made a gezerah that after the temple was destroyed, that this is too much joy to put this tiara on the hatanim's heads, so they shouldn't do it. So the rabbi did it. So Shmuel comes along and tells him, "Ni'chava di'yitrim neshe." It's better that your head be chopped off before you put this thing on your head. It's better that the head be chopped off. That's his way of saying, take it off. What do you think happened?
Oh, no.
Yes, exactly. V'chen havale, it happened. From here you see what? Be careful what you say. He should have just told them, take it off your head, we don't do that anymore. He said, what? Better that your head falls off than you wear that on your head. 2 days later, his head fell off. V'chen mighty sham over there, harine ke yoseh, bo demaj, shelo yafeh osot otan nashim ha'omrot. Nu eyagra I v'choshbot shem bazeh klum shelo etba. They say, I guess I shouldn't drown. You're never supposed to talk any negative things like that.
Don't open the
mouth of the satan. Shelo etba. I hope I don't drown. What are you opening your mouth? You don't drown. All that talk is even he said, I hope I don't. Shelo etba. Haba ni avad yatim meshev la avad ken. Okay. Last one. Shalach lach bekal pnei amayim ara bibay. In bikashta la'asot tzedakah, if you're interested in doing tzedakah, ase ota im amale Torah. Do it with the people that learn Torah. Od shamayti ma'asot mekama shasur chesedim goyim idiotot, וסוף שלו קדם בשבילו אותה, אחרי זה נמשך לשואל גדול פרקן, או כל שלח מאחד פני אמן כאילו בימים תמצאנו. ואל תחשוב האיש שהוא רוצה בחרם בלא מצווה, כי יש מצווה לשבוע קריב דברי קבלה, ודאי שהיא מדי שותים עליה שכה, which means, they're saying, throw your chesed, the pasuk says, throw your bread on the waters. What's going to end up happening? One day, it'll come back to you. A guy throws bread on the water. Now one day he's on a boat, he's starving, he needs food. All of a sudden, the bottle with the bread in it floats up to him and comes. Which is basically, that's the way of Shlomo saying, the chesed that you do is like a boomerang. You do a chesed, eventually it's going to come back and benefit you. You never know how the chesed will benefit you. So the Gemara tells many stories of people that did chesedim to goyim. And many years later, those goyim became big, governors and mayors and presidents, whatever it may be. And as a result that you did a chesed to the guy when he was a regular guy, that chesed came back to benefit the Jew. So you never know, you always do the right thing. Because every dog has his day. Therefore, you don't know when the tide's going to turn, and then all of a sudden, the guy who did the chesed is now in need to the one he helped many years before. A lot of stories like that. People that helped in one year, and the next year, that chesed came to benefit them. And they say, what goes around comes around. Somebody wrote a book, Chesed Boomerang. That's the theme of the book, basically. What you do today eventually comes around, and God will bring the people together. It goes around, comes around. This guy, this Azan, okay, so just had this terrible accident. Fire. So here, the other fire that we know in our community was the Sasson fire. Shetavot Esh, Azan, Sasson. And this over here in the fire of Sasson, so the lady survived, and the husband. And she came the other night and she spoke. She gave a chizuk. She doesn't usually speak. She went out of her normal gedir to go out and mechazek. I mean, she's probably the most suitable one to talk. And normally you say, what do you know from what you're talking? The worst one to talk is the one that experienced it, or maybe even experienced it worse. So you can say, she can talk. She talks, she's talking from experience. She's on her skin. She felt it. So it was a big nehamah to. So you look at things, you say, look how things come around. It's not so well known, although I know it. You don't know, but I do know it. So I know a lot of things you don't know. In the Sasson case, the fire was on a Shabbat, as you know. The funeral was on a Sunday, the next day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So the father, Gabi that they call him, he didn't have any clothes to his name. Everything was in the house. He doesn't have anything. He has whatever he's wearing. There's nothing. It's all destroyed. So on Saturday night or early Sunday morning, he asked the rabbi, could you help me get clothes? He says, come. The rabbi called Yossi Azan. Azan opened up the hat box. He opened the gate. They went under the gate. Azan tells Sasson, take the whole store. Take whatever you want. Take the whole store. There's nothing. This guy went to hell. Take the whole store. And he went, he got him suits, he took it. The first chesed that was done to Gabi Sasson was by Yossi Azan. Wow. Could you believe that God brings two people like this in the same hotel? What are the odds that these two people have nothing to do with each other? They don't know each other. How would these two people ever cross and meet, and that they have now a link? And now what happens? 2 years later, now the wife goes back and gives a chesed back to the family. Shem HaKadosh Baruch Hu's, but goes around, comes, hey, you did a chesed this way, all of a sudden comes back the other way. That guy, Azar, when he was doing the chesed to Sasson, he didn't know one day he's going to be on the other side of that equation. And that Sasson's going to have to help Azar. Who would dream that at that time over there? You say, you know, I'm helping this way. I'm helping this way. I'm good. He's got the problem. You tell that guy, one day it's going to be role reversed, the exact opposite. The other guy's going to be good, meaning stabilized, and the other one's going to need all the help. You wouldn't bet it for $1 million, because those things happen so rare. And if somebody told you that these are two people that have sharing the same experience that are meeting here, you'd say, what are you talking about? Look at Bori Olam. A lot of Hashbonot, obviously. We don't know the Hashbonot, but you do a chesed this way, it comes back the other way. Bori Olam keeps score to make sure everybody is... Something's going on, but Bori Olam keeps the screen, knows exactly who did chesed, who you did it to, and one day it's going to come back to you to benefit you. That's why you always do chesed. You never make a calculation on a chesed because you don't know the chesed, but no, just do chesed to everybody. Anybody comes, you do chesed to. Not that you're doing it so it can boomerang back, but it's going to boomerang back one day. So that's the incentive to do it, because you never know, one day you're going to be on the other side and that person did the chesed will have ability to reciprocate, especially when it comes to Goyim. There's many stories the Gemara tells where the Jew was nice to the Goy, the guy became a high guy, and he remembered the Jew.
King of Morocco.
Huh?
King of Morocco, someone did for
his yes, 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 so. Yes. There was a guy who became the editor of the Detroit Free Press. Remember the Detroit Free Press? Which historically was an anti-Semitic publication. Detroit is Henry Ford. Henry Ford was a anti-Semitic guy. Right, Abe? Ford was not a Jew lover. Not at all. So what happens? This guy takes over the Detroit Free Press, and before you know it, he's writing favorably about the Jews. And that... those columns would become syndicated in all the newspapers. So it was influencing, you know, millions of people's attitudes towards the Jews. So they asked the guy once, you know, not the grocery store. That's a different story. The grocery
store.
Another story. I think you're crossing the wires. So what happens over here is that they asked the guy, what's up? He said, I'll tell you the story. He says, my mother was a maid for Jewish people. A domestic help, domesticated. And the Jewish family, in those days, you know, they weren't, everybody didn't have, not everybody knew the customs of the Jews, and not like today we know everything is public. So the Jewish family went away. They went away for Hanukkah. And the maid's in the house. And Hanukkah came out like December 25th time. So the maid said she's going to do them a favor. She went, she's going to come home, the tree's not going to be set up. So she went, she bought them the tree. She put the tree right in front of the house. She put it up, the bells, the whistles, all the, whatever they put, the toad, all the, Ali, you know the words better than I do. On the tree, they have all the
ornaments.
So he puts all the noy sukkah, all the ornaments. She sets it up, she puts it right in front of the window. Now these Jews come home. Could you imagine? They drive by their house. They see this asherah, this tree over here in front of the window. Now, the lady that did it was, you know, she's innocent. She
good intentions.
But you could imagine what you'd do to such a lady. So the husband tells the wife and the kids, let me take care of this. Let me take care of this. Comes in, to calls out to the kitchen. Says, by the way, I want to thank you. That was very, very thoughtful of what you did. Because you thought that we needed and you did it. It's very, very thoughtful. However, there's no way you'd know. We don't do this, but he takes out a lot of money out of his pocket. He says, this is for your holiday. And go enjoy your holiday. So he says, my mother, this is the editor saying now, would always tell us that story that the Jews are good people. The guy didn't yell at me, he didn't embarrass me. As we got older, we realized what a Christmas tree is to the Jew. You know, as we got older, we started to realize that's a big mistake. That's not, you know, that's not a small mistake. I mean, normally you'd expect the guy to go, you're fired. That's it. Go get out of here. Where should I? Now he didn't fire me. He gave me a bonus and said, happy holiday. Look at that. For one Jew that behaved properly, did he know at that time he's going to affect 250 million people's attitude towards Jews? That her son would become an editor of the press and write columns favorable that would affect world opinion? How could you know at the time? So that's what the Midrash is telling you. Just be, what is the story?
Trump, son-in-law.
You would tell me the story, what happened with
that? The story is how he became the president, son-in-law was a Jew, and he became great to the Jewish people. It worked in our benefit.
Now, I'm not too sure if you're getting the point we're saying here. I'm talking about something very, very
specific.
Local. That when you do a favor to somebody, you don't realize that that favor one day can come back and benefit you, and in this case can benefit. What would have happened if he didn't do that? Then this guy would have had a bad taste of Jews, and then he would have wrote against the Jews, and then you have. So it's saying do chesed, because you never know how the chesed could come in effect. Huh? Oh, that's a story?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Putin was helped by the Jews.
It's true, nobody, I don't know. The story is,
what are they saying, Naki? Putin's parents. Oh, so that's why he's favorable to the Jews? He's considered favorable. Yeah, you open the thing, give them. He's considered favorable. Okay, good. I don't know. I don't keep up with the Russian politics. But if he's good to the Jews, because the Jew helped him, so that's it. Same thing. Say what goes around comes around. But you never know. Now, at the time that he helped him, he wasn't a big shot at the time. There were poor people, probably. His mother was a zona, his father was a drunkard, and they still helped him out for some reason. I'm telling you, that's how it is usually. And still, okay. So that's a. So the al yashob ha'ish shehotzaa b'chinam. God said, what are you helping the goy for? Wasting your money? What are you giving it to? It's not. It's money well spent. Ki yesh mitzvah l'shvul kim devre kabbalah. This is the Brekaba, meaning the words of the Midrash. Hazal is telling you it's money well spent. So you shouldn't say, well, what are you giving your money to Goy for? Better give it to the yeshiva. Of course, give it to both. Help the Goy out if he needs the help at the time. And the Hadush over here is, it's not considered giving a Goy a gift for nothing. Normally you can't just give gifts for nothing. But if you have this Kavanah that you're giving it because one day this can help Klai Yisrael according to this formula, so therefore it's money well spent. Uvadai shimida shenotim alei haschar. You're going to get reward. You're going to get reward for this. I told you, I think once. We were in Florida, Miami once, recently, and we went to. I'm walking with the boys to get to shul. I stopped off at Starbucks to get a coffee before shul. I'm not sure you passed the Starbucks. It was 5:30 a.m.
On Harding Avenue.
I'm not going to give. I'm not giving more than information than I gave you already. So now I get there. There's two cops in front of me, Bell Harbor Police. One guy orders a frappuccino, another guy a mochaccino, and all this nonsense. So I tell the guy, put my hand right, I'll take care of it. Oh, thank you, sir. Appreciate it, sir. Thank you, sir. Beautiful. No, no problem. Enjoy yourself. Okay, I pay the guy nothing. It costs me $10. So the boys asked me after, Daddy, well, I want to understand your thought process here. What do you, so I explain to him, you tell to me. He says, because one day you think that you're going to be speeding in Bell Harbor, And that guy will see you. I mean, what are the odds that's going to happen? That I'm in speed, his odds are good. But that guy's going to catch me, that I bought the coffee, he's going to remember. That's money. That's bad money then. It's a bad risk. It's a bad risk. But if I'm assuming that there's a lot of Jews live in Bell Harbor, and there might be one day a Jew gets into a thing with this cop, and now the cop might say to himself, you know something? Jews are not such bad people. Because a guy bought him a coffee for $3.50. It might change his attitude or job to help another guy down the line. And who knows if that happened. Could be that day it happened where a guy bumped into a Jew and the Jew had been in trouble. And the guy said, you know something? This is my payback. So therefore, always throw hasadim out. Because it might not come back directly to you, but you might end up helping Klal Yisrael, you know, down the line. So that's time and effort well spent. Huh? Of course. People don't realize it. They get the guy angry. And today he can't do anything to you because he's a janitor. So he said, yeah, he's a janitor. What are you going to do to me? You're going to throw the mop at me? What's he going to do to me, the guy? And all of a sudden, the guy, before you know, oh my God, this guy became, he became a serious guy now. Now you got to deal with the guy. Now you need a variance. You got to go to that guy. He goes, oh, you want the variance? Jump in the lake. You wouldn't even give me $5 tip on the, and it's going to happen because that's the way Hashem runs the world. So you have to be basically the, you know what the lesson is? What's the lesson? You have to summarize it. Be nice to everybody. Be nice to everybody. You have to teach your kids that. Huh? Be nice to everybody. You can't teach your kids, oh, this guy's nothing. Maybe have to, he's a maid. Kapara on the maid. Be nice to everybody. Be nice to the people low, people high. You never know. The world has a way of, it turns. The wheel of fortune turns. The guy who's up comes down, up. It always pays to be nice. It always pays to be nice. It always pays to be nice. Okay, so that's that. Now we'll just say one thing on the parasha. So that's Orot Tanim, good Musar. Just one word, Rabotai. So what are we learning here today, Rabotai? Shemot, okay, Shemot. Vayi bayimim ahem vayigdal Moshe vayetzeh lecha vayar besiblotam. Vayar ish mitzri make ish evri me'ehav. This is a complicated story here. What did he see over here? He saw ish mitzri, he saw an Egyptian man, make ish evri, beating up on a Jewish man, me'ehav. So Rashi tells us the story. Who is this Ish Mitzri? Noges haya. Mimune al shotrei Yisrael. So he was one of the, exactly. Vaya ma'amidam mekirot agebe lemelachtam. And they would call up the people to get up at the crack of dawn. So make ishevri malkeu verodehu. So he's beating up on the Jew.
What's the name?
Rodeo, meaning he's beating him up. Uba'ala shel Shulamit bat Divri haya. It tells us who the guy was. The husband of Shulamit bat Divri. Venatan enav bai. Put his eyes on his wife. Uba'layla ha'imido ve'otziyo mebeto. In the middle of the night, he threw him out of his house. Vu hazar v'nechnas labayit. And he went back into the house. The wife thought it was the husband forgot something. Meanwhile, it was this Egyptian guy. He went with Shulamit. She thought it was the husband. The Hazara Ish Lebeto, he comes back home and he realized that he was duped. When the Egyptian saw that the guy said, "What did you do to my wife this morning? Shut up." That's the, so that was the, what the, exactly. This was the precipitous to the to this violent attack. There was a history. This was not a a random attack. It was attacking him because there was a history over here. So Moshe Rabbeinu looks both directions. Vayarki en ish. Nobody there. Vayachet ha-Mitzri. So he hits the Egyptian. Vayitmeneu b'chol, and he buries him. One observation. In the beginning, the pasuk calls the guy Ish Mitzri. Calls him an Ish Mitzri. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu looks around, Vayifen kova kova yad ki en ish, there was nobody there, Vayachet ha-Mitzri. Before he kills him, he just calls him a Mitzri. He doesn't call him Ish Mitzri. Do understand the question here?
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have called him an Ish Mitzri.
Ish is
somebody significant. So the beginning, he's called Ish Mitzri, Makeh Ish Evri. I don't have a problem with Ish Evri. Evri is Ish.
No problem. That doesn't bother me.
But the Ish Mitzri, okay, for some reason he's Ish Mitzri. But when he's about to kill him, Bayachet HaMitzri. Why doesn't it say Bayachet Ish HaMitzri? Understand the question? But I saw one of the Mefashim say something very, very interesting based on something that's later on this week's parasha. Go to the end of the parasha. You remember when Moshe Rabbeinu, as a result of this story, he becomes a fugitive and he has to run to Midian. Okay, the next page. So the pasuk says, the shepherds came to the well and they started to chase the daughters of Yitro away. Moshe Yoshian. Moshe, he protects them. Vayashket Sonam. So all of a sudden they come home quicker than usual, the girls. So Yitro says, "Madua mi'artim bo'ayom? What did you come home so fast?" Tomane ish mitzri yitzilanu. Mitzri saved us. Who's the Ish Mitzri? Moshe. Ish Mitzri, it's Ilanu. Vayashket Ason, he gave us she, he gave us all the work. Vayomer ben otav ve'ayo, where's the guy? Where is he? Lama ze'azavtem et ha'ish? Why did you leave the Ish? K'ren lo v'yochal lachem. Over here, why did you leave the Ish? How come it doesn't say Ish HaMitzri? Yeah, they tell him Ish Mitzri Yitzilanu. So he said, call the guy. Lama ze'avta azavtem et ha'ish? He should say, Lama azavtem et Ish HaMitzri? Again, you see, it starts off Ish. In this way, it starts off Ish Mitzri and ends up with Ish. But what's the explanation? Amazing explanation, Abu. Who's Yitro? Very good. Not at this point.
No.
At this point, what is he?
Priest.
The priest. What was he? He sat on the advisory board of Paro.
All right.
He's one of the three advisors. You have Bil'am, Iyov, and Yitro. Bil'am was outspoken. Yeah, kill the Jews. Kill them. Yeah, do it. And he got his just desserts. He ends up getting killed, but goes around, comes around. Iyov, he pleaded the Fifth Amendment. He had no opinion. He gets his just desserts, then he goes through pain. where he should have opened his mouth, he didn't. So Borel said, now you can open your mouth a lot and say, ha ha ha, ooh, ooh, ah, in pain. That's the punishment of Iyov. And Yitro, he was only outspoken. He said, what you're doing is wrong. What you're doing is wrong. You can't do this to the Jewish people. And Paro didn't like that answer. So he had to run away for his life. So Yitro was a decent guy. Not a botai. If anybody knew how cruel the Egyptians were, it's Yitro. He's an insider. He knows everything that Paro's planning on doing to the Jews. He sat at the meetings. I mean, he doesn't have to be told this from the newspaper, what the newspapers say. He knows this because he's a cabinet member. He sees every one of the decrees of the Egyptians comes to him. They were mulling over it. Imagine somebody would come along. It's a bad example because what the Nazis did, everybody knew it. But let's say in the beginning, because this was in the beginning of the process, before, in the beginning of the process where you don't know who the Nazis are, and one guy escapes the SS, group, he runs away from it, and he knows who these people are. And somebody comes along and says, I just met the gentleman Heinrich Himmler. And the guy says, gentlemen? There's no gentleman here. This guy's no gentleman. These are savages. You don't know these people. What do you mean? Looks like a decent guy. Walks with a tie. Says, good morning. You know, he's a behemagasa. I'm with these people. They're not humans. It's impossible. You got the wrong guy. He's not a gentleman. What happens? The daughters of Yitro, they come to tell their father, Daddy, Ish Mitzri. He says, Ish Mitzri? There's no such thing as Ish Mitzri. Those two words don't go together. The Mitzrim are animals. I sat in the cabinet meetings. I know who these people are. There's no... He's an Ish, but he's not a Mitzri. That's why he tells them in the beginning, Lamed Azavten, Eta Ish, Kid Enlo. Why did you have the Ish? This guy's no Egyptian. If this guy did so much hatred for you, he might come from Egypt. He might have showed you an Egyptian passport. There's no way. Just like Himmler cannot be a gentleman, you got the wrong guy. So therefore, Yitro right away tells his children, don't fool yourself. Don't fool yourself. There's no Ish over here. There's no Ish Mitzri. He's an Ish. Oh, so based on that, you go back to our story over here. Our story says over here, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to the fields. This is in the beginning of the story. What happens? Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish evri. In the beginning, when Moshe Rabbeinu sees it, he doesn't know who this Egyptian is. I mean, he's one of the higher guys. Why is he hitting the guy? Maybe he's answering to his superiors. Maybe he has a... At this point over here, he's an important Egyptian. At this point over here, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't yet have the whole picture. So he sees an Ish Mitzri. He's an important guy. But all of a sudden, he starts to see exactly what went on over here. He starts to see this guy's Rasha Midway. Moshe Rabbeinu so Beruach HaKodesh. What does he see Beruach HaKodesh? This guy is a rapist. Now he wants to be a murderer. He says, now I'm starting to see what these Egyptians are all about. This guy, so yesterday walks around with a tie, nice, good morning, good morning. Moshe Rabbeinu right away saw that this is all a thin facade. This is all a thin veneer of humanity. There's no Ish over here. So in the next pasuk, Vayifen Kova Kovayarki En Ish. There's no Ish in this whole country. Ki En Ish. There's no Ish here. You know what you have? Vayachetam Mitzri. All you have is Nazis. There's no gentlemen. We always learn Ki En Ish. There's nobody watching. No, he looked at the whole Egypt. He said, guess what? All these guys that are walking around Minumas with their culture, with their sophistication. It's all skin deep. It's all a hoax. That would be somebody, you know, in Germany who was part of the insiders that would see this in 1933 before anybody knew anything. And you start to look around Germany and say, Ki en ish, there's no ish here, Rabotai. What do you mean? Everybody looks, en ish. And sure enough, they'd be right. Moshe Rabbeinu has the penetrating eyes that right away he says, there's nobody over here that's worthy to be called a human being. So that's a novel interpretation in order to explain these pesukim. Somebody asked a good question. Somebody asked a good question over here. What says Moshe Rabbeinu? He kills this Egyptian using one of the Shemot. There's different names of God. And some of the names you could use to take revenge. You understand? The names of God, if you know how to use them correctly, they can cause punishment to people. Achamim say, for example, you know, why can't the Kohen Gadol marry a widow? Why not? What's the matter? Why can't he marry a widow? The Zohar says because he knows the names. So he's going to come to the Beit Mikdash one day, see a nice couple, and say, hey, it's a nice lady, that lady over there. Abracadabra, the husband dies. He can't take it. Because he knows the abracadabras, so therefore they don't let him take an almanah, because he knows the Shemot. Every time a queen sees a nice lady, all of a sudden, the next day, the husband croaks. The queen goes, oh, what a shame. Oof, what a shame. Good guy. Meanwhile, he was reading voodoo on him the whole night before. He had the doll. You know, he's putting the pins in the guy's head. The guy died the next night. And then the queen goes, oh, what a shame. And he goes to visit, you know, the Avelut and says, by the way, when the Avelut is over, here's my number. You know, maybe you call me. You can come to the Beit Mikdash. I'll give you a tour of the Kodesh Kodeshim. You understand what's going on over here? So you see over here, the Sadikim and other Shemot, they can make trouble. Moshe enjoys it. No, I brought my lawyer with us this morning, so please, anything that you say will be held against you. Moshe is representing me. In any event, so now, why does he have to kill him with the Shemot? I mean, you don't use Shemot to kill people. Shemot can only be used unless it's, you know, absolutely necessary to use the Shemot. Otherwise, I'd use it every day on you guys. But you have to be very, very, you know, conservative, let's say, before using Shemot. The Haidah tells a story of a certain fellow that came to Jerusalem, an Arab guy, Abu Sayfin. Abu Sayfin came to Yerushalayim, and Rav Chaim Vital was there, and he told Rav Chaim Vital that he wants to know where the river of Gihon is, the Gihon River. And Chaim Vital didn't want to get involved with Abu Sayfin, this guy. So he says he used one of the names of God and he flew to Damascus. He ran away from the guy. He would meet the Arizal later on and the Arizal would tell him, you blew it. You blew it. If you would have opened up the Gihon River at that moment over there, this guy Abu Sayfin was the Gilgul of Sanhariv. Hariv in Arabic is Sayfin. And he closed the Gihon River, and that was the tikkun to open it, and you were there at the time. So the Chaim Vital says, I didn't want to use the Shemot. So he says, but you used the sham to fly to Damascus. You used it anyway. So instead of using it, you should have opened up the Yom Revan, and the Mashiach would have came. So you see that the Tzaddikim, you know, maybe you shouldn't have used it, but once you used it already. But the Shemot are used very, very, very sparingly. So the question then is, why did Moshe Rabbeinu kill him in the conventional way? Moshe Rabbeinu was a warrior. He could take a sword and chop his head off. He was big. He was a gibor. So it's not like he did it out of weakness. So why did he use the Shemot? That's a big question. So I saw an interesting interpretation. Let's see if I can make the calculation over here. What did this guy do necessarily that he was Hayav Mita in the first place? What did he do? He slept with somebody else's wife. Eshet Ish. And Ben Noah, as you're correctly saying, is guilty on that. Only problem is, there's no witnesses. In the court of Ben Noah, you still need a witness. Now, who's the witness? There's no witness over here. A lady cannot be a witness, although she knows that she's not the witness. The husband that came in, it's circumstantial. He didn't see anything. He just he put two and two together. Moshe Rabbeinu knows what happened, but that's Ruach HaKodesh. That's not admissible in the court. So you can't just kill people because you know what they did. It's got to follow Shiva Mitzvah B'nei Noah. You can't come into the court. Rabotai, I had Ruach HaKodesh last night, and I saw this guy commit Eshet Ish. Be'emet? Prove to me that you have Ruach HaKodesh. Should I prove it to you? I'll tell you what you did. Okay, kill the guy. I don't know what I did. Every guy's going to come into court and start claiming that he has a war. Of course, you're going to start killing people. So how does Moshe Rabbeinu have a right to kill this guy? Unless you tell me, because he was beating up on the Jew. Beating up on the Jew, it's not so simple that you can kill a guy for beating on the Jew. First of all, he wasn't killing him, he was hitting him. So what's the law? If a goy starts giving malkut to a Jew, you can shoot him in the head? Well, I never heard that halakha, by the way. I'm not too sure that's the law. I mean, Harambam actually writes, if I'm not mistaken, that if a goy is mitza'er, a Jew, causes a Jew tza'ar, like in this case, at most he's hayav mita bide shamayim. Mita bide shamayim means God will handle it, but on the court over here, you can't really do anything. You know the difference between mita bide shamayim and mita bedin? Mita bedin means the bedin is gonna go after the guy. Shamayim, like we just learned. The guy is cowled. Or Hashem will take care of the guy. He's on the list. He's on the death list. Some cases God handles. So at most, this guy over here was hayav, at most, mitabi de shamayim. Oh. So if you learn like that this is a mitabi de shamayim case, so now the story becomes much more understood. If you go to the pasuk, it says, "Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish evri." Makeh ish evri. That's only hayam mitesh de shemaim. Moshe is not allowed to take out his sword and kill. Vayifen kovako. All of a sudden, it says vayifen kovako. Rashi says, "What does it mean? He looked at kovako." Rashi, Ra'ama Asalo Babayit. He saw in Ruach HaKodesh what he did in the house. Ba'ifen Ko Vako, he saw two things. He saw Ko Vako. He saw what happened in the house, and now he sees what he's doing to him in the field. First, he took his wife, and now he's beating him up. Both things, if there's a witness, He's Hayab Bidei Shamayim. Vayar ki en ish. Moshe saw there's no ish to testify.
Wow.
And it's got to be an ish because only a male can testify. Vayar ki en ish. There's no witnesses over here. So therefore, Vayachet HaMitzri, he has to use Shemot. Because when you use a Shem, that's Bita Bidei Shamayim. So he's following the law, Moshe, better perfect.
Yeah. He didn't stab him.
He didn't stab him. Use the Shem. Is there a better Bita Bidei Shamayim than using the Shem? That is Bita Bidei Shamayim. That's textbook Bita Bidei Shamayim. Let God kill him. Oh. So then the sheet throws in also, you know, the Vaif and Kovako, he looked in the future and he saw nobody consequential is going to come out of this guy. You know, could be he'll have some convert down the line, some, you know, good Samaritan will come out of this guy, some good Egyptian. We saw that the guy's, his progeny is empty, he's bankrupt. Why does she have to bring that down? Now she says, Vayarki en ish, she en ish atid latzet bemenu she yitgayer. It's very good. If he's hayav mita bide adam, we don't make these considerations. When a guy comes to court and he's hayav sikila, we don't say, hey, listen, you know, don't kill him. You know, it could be Rabbi Akiva's going to come out of him one day. So, you know, you can't get... Listen, we don't make cheshbonot like that. But if a guy's hayab bidei shamayim, hey, slow down. Before you use the shem on him, maybe let God do the shem on him. Who asked you to do it today? Maybe do tomorrow. So Moshe Rabbeinu has to justify why he can take the mita bidei shamayim in his own hands. That's got to be justice. So that she says, no, he scanned the guy to the end of time, and the guy's nothing. The guy's got zero coming out of him. The guy's just totally, totally bankrupt from any positive. Oh, so any positive. So then, why not? Zirizim Bakdimim. You know, why wait for the Mitabide Shamayim tomorrow when you can do the Mitabide Shamayim today? So that is another mahalach in this. In this story over here, again, that's looking at the episode over here from a halachic. So again, the first derash that we said was that Moshe Rabbeinu starts off like everybody else, ish mitzri. Then he realizes there's no such thing as ish mitzri. Mitzri is a mitzri. There's no gentleman. There's no nice guy. All that stuff is just you know, it's for the cameras. Like the Nazis did, everything for the cameras, you know. They would open up these, you know, Red Cross places, and they would walk into these concentration camps. They would show music playing, and the Jews sitting there smiling. It was all staged for the news. And so, well, how's life in there? And the Jews say, oh, it's very good. We're playing band practice. The other ones joy. And then once they left, boom, it's all staged. And people who knew that, they don't. There's no ish over here. The second derash is more of a, you know, halachic consideration that Moshe Rabbeinu followed to the T, and it's meduyak in the pesukim. What's the third explanation that we said? And then we'll call it a day. Vayar ish mitzri make ish evri me'ehav. That's the question over here. Make ish evri. That I got. Make ish evri. What does it mean, me'ehav? From his brothers. Well, obviously, this wasn't Moshe's brother. They weren't beating up Aaron. So it means from
our school.
From our people. From b'nei amenu. From what?
Brethren.
Brethren. Brethren. I said brothers. Brethren.
No, Moshe.
So lawyers talk. Wherein, whereof, all that. Hence, you know that. That's how lawyers talk. Say brother, say brethren. So now over here, what does it say me'ehav? What does it mean me'ehav? Of course. By the way, ish evri. Ish evri is ish evri. That's automatic. But it's ish evri, it's ehav. Answer my question.
Yeah.
What do you have to be? Once you, I know Moshe is Jewish, and I know Ish Avri is Jewish. So I put two and two together. If Moshe is Jewish and Ish Avri is Jewish, I must be a Rav. There's no extra words in the Torah. So explanation is like this. Explanation is like this. The next day, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, Yitzi b'yom ha'shini, second day. V'hineh shnei anashim evrim nitziv. Now you have two Jews fighting. Day before was anti-Semitism. The next day, it was Jews fighting. V'yom ha'larasha, what are you doing? Why are you raising your hand to your friend? He comes and goes, harugeni ata omer. You're going to verbally kill me like you verbally killed the guy yesterday? Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayiram Moshe got scared. Vayomar, and he says, Achen noda hadavar. Simple interpretation, he got scared.
Word got out.
He got scared that the word got out and these guys are going to make trouble for him. He says, Achen noda, behold, you know, I thought the coast was clear. The coast wasn't so clear. They looked at the cameras. So that she says, stand this, that she's difficult. Vayiram Moshe, kifshuto. What does kifshuto mean? He was scared because he knew that people were on him. Umidrash, then he quotes the midrash. Da'aglo ashirab b'yisir d'sha'im. He saw that the Jewish people have tattletalers amongst them. What are you threatening me to call the Hakume? You threatening me to call the FBI? He's, oh. Amar me'ata shema enam re'uim ne'ga'el. If these are the type of people we have over here, well,
they're not worthy.
Then maybe they're not worthy of any redemption. Interesting. What was the matter with the pshat here, by the way? I like the pshat. Whenever she has to bring a midrash, that means the pshat, it's a little difficult. What's the matter with the pshat? Moshe was scared because they were on him. So I saw one of the mefashim explain, I tell you what bothers Rashi over here. What bothers Rashi over here is, the Torah will only tell me facts if those facts lead to something consequential. But it doesn't just give me play-by-play of somebody's emotions as it's happening if it doesn't cause something consequential. What did this fear cause to Moshe? No, he didn't run. At this point, Moshe doesn't run. That's the point. Most people don't know that. People think, oh, he got scared and he ran. He didn't run. When does he run? Vayishma paro et hadavar. Only after Paro found out about it. Then, so this vayira, nothing happened. Vayira, he went home and slept that night. He slept in his house that night, Moshe Rabbeinu. Even though he knew that Tam Abiram heard about it, even though he knew everything. So vayira, so you tell me his emotions? He was scared. He was nervous. He was apprehensive. So that's only going to tell you a reaction that causes something. He doesn't run away until after Paro. Now, could be Paro heard about it 6 weeks later. I don't know when Paro heard about it. So this Vayira, nothing came out of it. So then what she says, if you explain the Pshat, then you don't have a consequence of this Vayira. But if you explain the Midrash, you have a consequence. Because now Moshe Rabbeinu came to a conclusion. That fear was, hey, I'm worried now that Klai is not going to get redeemed because these are the type of people we have. So that's why that she needs the midrash in order to give me a consequential of this vayira. Understand how we're learning it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable that she has. You have to know why you need the second answer. Vayomar, he says, Achen noda hadavar. Now it's true. If you go according to the pshat, yes, they're on to me. Achen noda hadavar. It's been revealed what I did. But then she gives, what about according to the second interpretation? According to the second interpretation, he says, Vayira, I'm scared if the Jewish people have tattletales amongst them. I don't know if they're going to get redeemed. And then he says, Achen noda hadavar. ומדרשון נודלי הדבר שהיה הייתי תמה מה חטאו ישראל מקושי מומות להיות נרדים בעבודת פרך אבל רואה אני שהם ראויים לכך. I was always wondering why the Jewish people getting this punishment. What did they do to deserve it? Achen, behold, nodah davar. Now I know why they deserve it. This is why they deserve it. So according to that first interpretation, on the Midrash, it works. Good. So Moshe Rabbeinu sees on the second day, now I know.
Is that why they deserve it?
Well, I'm assuming that Moshe Rabbeinu's assessment is correct. Okay, now watch. So now you know both stories. Now you know both stories. The first day was the... Yes. But it doesn't answer me'ehav. So explanation we said like this, we saw from the Mifaj. Me'ehav. Amazing story. Everybody knows that all the destructions come from Sinat Chinam, and all the Berakah comes from Ahadut. It's a simple formula. It's so simple. So simple that for 2,000 years we can't get it right, but that's the formula. If everybody would be like Joe Towell that loves everybody, that's kind to everybody, and doesn't have a bad bone in his body, then we'd be okay. There's always exceptions. He's allowed one guy to hate. In any event, so they know that formula. Sinat Kanam is... Like we told you the story the other day, the guy went to Jerusalem. He came back and his friend said, what did you see in Jerusalem? He says, I saw the two oldest things. Two old items, the Kotel HaMa'arabi and Sinat HaNam. Two old Jewish artifacts. Sinat HaNam is an old relic from Jewish people. It's something we have. And guess what? He's right. It's as old as the Kotel. So that's why you have the Kotel, because of Sinat HaNam. So it's the same. You can probably date Sinat HaNam back to the Kotel. They both happened. They both started around the same time. One is a result of the other. Understand? Anyway, so the Mefarshim said, you know what Me'ahav means? There was 1,000 Jews in a group. 1,000 Jews in a group. This Egyptian came over here and he took one Jew from the group. Hey, you Jew, he pulled him out of the crowd. Vayar, as the Pasuk says, Ish Mitzri Make Ish Evri Me'ehav. From the Ehav. From the Jews' brothers. 1,000 Jews gathered like the Germans used to do. They used to pick selections. Me'ehav. All of a sudden the Mitzri says, you. Boom, he grabs a guy. So Moshe Rabbeinu was waiting to see the reaction of the people. Here you see that they're taking one of your brothers and they're beating. Ve'ifen ko vako. He looks, there's 500 people on this side, 500 people. Vayar ki en ish. There's not one guy that came to defend the brother. You see your brother getting beaten up. Nobody came to help the guy. Nobody's screaming. Nobody's yelling. Everybody just stood there and watched. They said, thank God it wasn't me. Should have been. This is a problem. I see that Klai Yisrael doesn't have that that unity. You could see another Jew getting beaten up and everybody's just standing over there. But Moshe Rabbeinu is patient. Moshe Rabbeinu says, listen, benefit of the doubt. Was it easy for the Jewish prisoner in Auschwitz to rise up against the Gestapo when they saw some... Not so easy, you know. When you're the oppressed, it's not so simple that the oppressed can rise up against the oppressed. They got guns, they got everything. So what are you going to... So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I reserve yet judgment. But Vayetze Bayom Hasheni. Now on the second day, Vineshne Anashim Evrim Nitzim. Now we saw two Jews fight. Now he says, Achen Noda Davar, and what I saw yesterday. Yesterday I gave them the benefit of the doubt, but there's no benefit. They beat each other up. So therefore, it's because of what I thought, that they don't have camaraderie amongst each other. Because if they had camaraderie, at least they wouldn't beat each other up. But if they're beating each other up, achen noda davar, now I know exactly, and now I know why we didn't get redeemed yet. Because there's sinat hanam taking place amongst the Klai Yisrael. And therefore, they're guilty not only for two Jews beating each other up, but they're guilty that when the guy was beating the Jew, how come nobody came to defend them? They're guilty for that as well. And that's an important lesson, that when Klal Yisrael is united, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Goyim are not united. It works like in the reverse. Somebody's always going to be united. So Klal Yisrael is united, the Goyim are dispersed. Klal Yisrael is dispersed, and then they're united. Understand? So when you see 150 nations united, and the nations over there, they're united. What's our status over there? So I saw one of the Darshanim explain it in Megillat Esther. It says in Megillat Esther, that's it, Purim's right around the corner. What day is Purim? When is it coming up now?
Adar.
Now it's a couple of months. So now what happens? What happens is, Haman goes to Hashverosh. Yishno am echad mefozar umforad ben ha'amim. Bechol midirom malchutecha. Yishno Am Echad is a nation, Mefuzar Umforad Bechol Ha'amim. Wherever you go, there's Jews. They're scattered all over the country, all over the king's dominion. Mefuzar Umforad. But one rabbi made a derash beautiful. Haman knew the secret of the Jewish people. He says, Yishno Am Echad, period. If Klal Yisrael is Am Echad, then you know what that causes? Mefuzar umforad ben ha'amim. Then the nations become mefuzar umforad. Yishno am echad kama. If Klal Yisrael says am echad, then mefuzar umforad ben ha'amim. Then the nations are scattered. But the problem is that if they're not, if Klal Yisrael is scattered, somebody always has to be united in the world. It's like a scale. You know? It goes up, we go down. They go up, we go down. So that's the musar over here that you have to. They have to take from this. So we have three interpretations on this story. The first interpretation is there's no Ish Mitzri, doesn't exist. Just like there's no good Nazi. Number two, Moshe Rabbeinu only was able to use the Shema Meforash because of the halachic considerations that took place over here. And the third interpretation is Me'ehav. Moshe Rabbeinu understood under these circumstances there's no hope for the Jewish people in the near future, because if they cannot defend each other against Goyim, and even worse, they can't defend themselves from themselves. Achen noda hadavar. Then already it's clear why this is happening. השר ברכות כל יסי לפיך כבעל להם תרסות של אמר אבא סמן ספר לתורה
אבא ידיר